blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Samha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Samha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Samha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning? Janice?
I would just like to give my gratitude that these Sunday talks are recorded, so that those of us that have access to them, it's a really precious opportunity to be with Sangha.
That's nice to hear. I'm glad people are using those.
And what I'm looking at is the opportunity to be here for a month and seeing how it works to trust life and trust the monastery, trust the structure, trust the monastic residents here and maybe the other residents that are visiting monks, just trusting the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a good place to practice that, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I've often looked at it as the monastery sort of represents life in a way, because it's kind of hard to practice directly with life, with a capital L, without a lot of practice. And so it's handy to have something that's kind of more tangible and smaller. You know, so giving over, for example, some issue or something over to guidance here at the monastery, is good practice for giving it over to life. And it gives us a real tangible kind of way to practice that.
Yeah, it's very tangible. And I sort of have mentioned before, I feel like it's like being under a magnifying glass. And of course here it's my experience that the sun is shining every day. And so that fire goes right directly through, and those
burns away karma.
They do. It's like laser zapping or something.
Yeah.
And
it's nice to be grateful for that, isn't that? It's nice to be grateful for that process, because I'm sure egocentric karmic conditioning is not particularly grateful for it, because it's what's being zapped.
Yes.
But it's nice to be able to align with the heart. It's a part of that trust that mentioned. To align with the heart and really see how beneficial it is to have that kind of scrutiny applied.
It is, and you know what I see in that is that going through the process, there can be a trust, because I've been through lots of crises in my life where I know with faith of that I am equal to my life and I can trust life. And whether I know how to do anything or not, I just take the first step, and I am adequate. But somehow, it seems, there's that opportunity to be living in forgetfulness rather than mindfulness throughout.
Practicing forgetfulness.
Yes. And I was looking how, if I don't have awareness I really can't have mindfulness. And, you know, they're kind of tandem. They support each other. And, you know, for example, when I saw there's things arising, so like being under that magnifying glass that's heating me up, things arising, when I'm in that process, there sometimes isn't a whole lot of trust. I'm just feeling the pain.
Right. So there's a tendency, tell me if this is it, when there is a kind of scrutiny, and of course it is ego that's being scrutinized. And so, because we have a habit of identifying ourselves with ego, when that happens, there's a pain that happens, and there's a tendency to kind of collapse into old ways of protecting the self, you know, with however we've learned to do that, however we've learned to survive in life. And so, with that, the awareness disappears, and the trust disappears, to at least to some extent, because we're kind of going back into old ways of holding on and protecting.
Well, that's really helpful. Yeah, because what I see is the entire experience is creates humility, and you know, there's that embarrassment. Oh my God, can I? You know, I did this.
Can't believe I did it again.
I know, I'm mad.
And what was I thinking?
No. Yeah, and from that experience. Getting through the other side, somehow this being does it, mm-hmm. gets through that.
It happens to the being anyway.
It happens, mm-hmm. somehow. Mm-hmm. And rather, it's humbling.
Yeah.
It's not humiliating then, it's humbling.
Well, it's humiliating for ego, probably.
It is.
If you identify with ego, you'll feel really humiliated. But it isn't really as humbling. I really like that connection you're making between trust and humility. You know, what I was seeing as you were saying that is, you know, we could talk about humility as disidentification from ego, basically. Because I think that's what you're describing. There's an identification with ego. It gets pointed to in some way. You know, that's basically what the scrutiny is. It's the attention is being directed to the processes that are going on in ego. And then, as you say, just with that trust and with that awareness, there's just a process of going through that and coming out of the other side, sort of stripped of that clinging ego, and we could even use the word arrogance, just as the opposite of humility, that was there before.
What was the word you used?
Arrogance.
Arrogance.
Yeah. I always say that just because it's the opposite of humility. You know, ego is going around saying, you know, I'm in charge, I'm the most important thing in the universe, I'm right, I know. And we get identified with that, and we completely lose awareness, and we completely lose trust. We only trust ego. But then there's that process you're describing of bringing awareness to that and mindfulness to it, accepting the scrutiny, and the willingness to go through a process of letting that be stripped away and coming out the other side with more humble, with humility, without that ego, without the belief in ego that was there a little while before.
Yeah, and somehow, you know, going through that process, like in the process, you know, when the scrambler is working, when I'm so identified, when I can't see, I feel blinded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I can't find any tool that would help, mm-hmm. communication or anything.
Mm-hmm. And yet the process is still happening, isn't it? The
it's
process
still
of disidentification is still happening.
Yeah.
You know what that implies, I think, is there is the trust. So that's happening in a container of trust. Otherwise you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't allow that to happen. You know, it would get pointed and you say, I'm out of here. You know, I'm not gonna tolerate this. This is, you know, this is what's wrong with it, and this is what's wrong with those people, or you know, whatever would come up from ego. But that's not what's going on. You know, it's getting pointed out, and I'm projecting a trust in the process. And so that kind of makes a container for all that to happen in. And so even though your experience in that container is, you know, I can't find any tools, and I don't know what's going on, and I, you know, but still, it's like the trust creates an environment where the transformation can happen anyway.
Yeah, what I can see in that was, like, for example, not being able to communicate after I signed the papers about the sale, about which contents I might like or mm-hmm. something, because there was a deadline, which was Friday, and having all that stuff come up. And Sherry saying the other day, well, you know, like, you could have just said, you know, somebody could have said, I'm out of here, I'm getting
Take
to
me
the
to
airport.
Airport. Yeah.
And you know, that thought never occurred. Mm-hmm. It never occurred at all. I just thought, oh, that's the guidance. I can't. Mm-hmm. And I just accepted it.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it? Boy, that takes a lot of angst, doesn't it?
Yeah. It wasn't even till, you know, maybe, you know, half a day later that I realized that.
Wait a second.
I didn't even think that. Yeah, mm-hmm. There was just that trust.
Thank you. Jen?
I've been experiencing a great deal of trust as well, which I'm really, really enjoying. I don't know how long it will be here, but...
Enjoy it while it lasts, right?
Yeah. And it's, let's see, it began in sitting meditation, but it's sort of like all these areas that I've been practicing with are sort of coming together. And... we've been talking a lot, it feels like, in the Sangha about, well, gosh, why not just focus on the breath and count it in meditation, you know? I mean, it's actually not that hard.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been looking at that, and then simultaneously, I think I've talked before about it's just, you know how we hear something a million times and then it just drops in as an experience and occurs to us as if it's occurring to us for the first time.
For the very first time. Mm-hmm.
So it occurred to me that I could just be with the sensations in my body.
Yay.
And not make it mean anything and not mm-hmm. React from it and all those things.
So even though you've been practicing that actually
for
years and years and years, you suddenly, it just dropped in, you got that on a whole new level.
Well, and I think, you know, Sherry talks about how there was a monk who talked years ago about coming back to the breath and making that motion to the forehead, mm-hmm. coming back to the breath,
so
as if that's an idea in our mind.
Right. Yeah. Instead of just for the recording, the way you usually do it is to the heart.
To the heart. Like, because mm-hmm. of course the breath, well, I suppose the breath is coming into the head too, you know. But instead of it being an idea, I mean, mm-hmm. the whole reason the breath is so helpful is it's a physical experience.
It's present.
Tactile. It's here in the, mm-hmm. you know, present moment in mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. physical expression. So I think that's some of what had been happening around sensations also, is the idea of just being with the sensations.
Yeah, it's amazing how that can happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it can seem like we are actually attending to a sensation, but there's like a tiny little film there over it, just because it's more we're attending to an idea of it instead.
And yet, I think, you know, like we always talk about, when the experience finally drops in, all of that other sort of practice that it wasn't mm-hmm. is helpful.
Sure, that's how we get there.
It's how the, oh, that's not it, that's not it, that's mm-hmm. not it, that's not it, oh, that's it! Mm-hmm. And the, all the that's not it was so helpful in finding what is it.
For sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, that's similar to what I've been seeing. I have been seeing, it feels like, especially in meditation, as I say, almost everything is conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've been experiencing that as so spacious and great, in the sense of, how to describe it? It's like, because in a way it's the flip of that, that conditioned mind is tiny and everything else is vast. But so the experience of it is just sitting and breathing and counting. And then...
Which is not in conditioned mind.
Which is not in conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
And but within that, everything, conditioned mind just keeps parading itself across that.
Okay, so what you're saying that almost everything that's arising as you're sitting there...
Yeah, it's like everything I've thought of as me
uh-huh.
is conditioning.
It's basically everything from the neck up.
And it's like this experience of... Because, you know, there's the obvious things, right? Like self-hate or... whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's clearly conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really got is, okay, wait a minute, if I'm sitting down here with this very, very clear intention to sit here and count the breath, then kind of by definition, anything other than that is not me.
Anything, yeah, especially if you look at it. I mean, it's interfering with that intention.
Exactly.
It's distracting. Yeah. It's trying to take you to other places. So that makes it really clear, doesn't it? It's almost really like there's an intentionality that's different from yours that is coming in and doing things.
So it must not be like who I really am. It
can't be, really. So you're not choosing that.
So all of it, so there I am, counting. And as I say, the gross things come through. But then, you know, things like, yeah, I wonder about, or, oh, okay, don't forget about the, oh, you know, if we did this then this would work there. And, you know, gosh, remember that time when all these different forms of it, and what comes in immediately is, wow, that's also not me. Mm-hmm. Huh?
So these are things that sometimes you might not see as much as your mind, but might assume that that's me.
Just me.
That's me, that's my experience, that's me. I don't want to say me thinking, because if it occurred to you, it was me thinking that occurred to you, that's conditioned mind.
Right.
This is just the experience of me happening.
Yeah.
So you've kind of bumped it back another level, and even those things that seem like me, you're now seeing are conditioned mind. And you're like, wow, that's conditioned mind too.
And the effect of it is incredible spaciousness. Mm-hmm. Because that... And the next parts I don't really have words for, I'm just experiencing it. But it's like, with that realization, it is set aside. And then there's just this vastness.
The it being the conditioning?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that in that, immediately, conditioning scrambles in with the, I mean, it doesn't say this, of course, because that would be stupid, but well, what does that mean? And what do I do? And that's where I'm talking about the trust thing that feels like years and years and years of having built up distrust of that. Again, I don't experience this verbally. It's just a sense. There's just a nothing. And that
nothing to do.
Nothing to do with it. Doesn't mean anything. But again, it's not, every time I go to record it, I'm like, even that's not quite it. Because it's not like it's not a verbal thing. It's just an experience of this profound trust in practice, in life, I guess, of, okay, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. It's almost like this, wow, it's going to be fascinating to see what's left. Uh-huh. You know, when all of that is truly... As that gets worn away, and it's no longer the operating system, what's
there? What is there that's not conditioned mind?
But it's not, and it's not even like a, because of course, at least I think, that is the experience that's happening. You know, so I'm saying, gosh, I wonder what's going to be there, and that is what's there.
Well, you're having that experience for now, aren't you? Because It's like the peeling the layers of the onion. Mm-hmm. So you're peeling a bunch of layers. Well, you've already peeled a bunch of layers. You're peeling some. They're not necessarily new layers, but they're new now.
Well, you can't. In my experience, you can't see that you've peeled the layers until you suddenly hit another place like this.
Exactly.
And it's like, wow, peeling the layers. And at a certain point, it feels like, at least in my experience, there becomes a layer where I get it that I'm always going to be peeling layers. Mm-hmm. And there's no end point, and there doesn't need to be, and there's nothing wrong with that. And
yeah, that's kind of what I'm seeing too. So, you know, there's this clarity and this spaciousness, and yet it's not the end of the exploration.
Exactly.
It seems like there's no end to the depth of what that is to be present.
Yeah. And you know, what's kind of fun about it is that it highlights identification. So, you know that image we use of the two fish jumping out of the water, mm-hmm. and the other one says, that stuff. So that image came to me the other day, where it feels like it's this extraordinary of experience of spending time out of the water, and then the initial dive back in is like, whoa, water. Mm-hmm. It's so, the first at least few minutes make it so clear. Mm-hmm. This is identification.
Yeah, you can see it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
It goes back to what you were saying earlier about how all of the experiences that we've had bring us to the moment we're in. Uh-huh. Right? And so there's the experience we're having now, and who knows what will happen next. But probably, it's not like you'll, it's very unlikely you'll stay in this state where you are now, because there's just so much more to explore. And so kind of go back into the water, and that's a part of taking you to the whatever the next depth is,
yeah.
And to coming back out and continuing to see it in a deeper and deeper way.
And what's fun is it feels like awareness can watch the experience of water become normal again.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the water, out of the water, out of the water, which is all fun and great, but not like the point.
Yeah, it's not
and
like
then coming goal. Back into the water, it's like, whoa, water. But then after a few minutes, like, you know, to use the metaphor, the temperature, we don't see we're in water anymore. Mm-hmm. We're just in water, mm-hmm. but we don't know that. But it feels like awareness is still aware of that process of just it becoming water again.
Mm-hmm. It's aware that there's more to it than that. Because there's an experience that there's more to it than that.
Uh-huh.
Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah, maybe. It's like, I don't know.
You've been outside of the water.
You've been outside of the
so
water, and on some level, it feels like Jen just gets used to being in the water again.
Mm-hmm.
But awareness is still aware that that process is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it seems like a theme in what you're saying is the basic condition orientation we have to... It's hard to say it in any kind of different language than we always use, but to be in relationship with what is,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be a somebody, like you were talking about earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, what does this mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, there's this really fundamental, you know, that has to be our relationship to our experience, is somebody relating and trying to sort that out.
Yeah.
And then there's this place of trust where we're experimenting with letting that go.
Yeah.
And just really letting the experience flow and trusting that whatever we need will be there.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of it seems like a deepening and deepening of that experience.
Yeah, like what I hear and what you're saying is that we're whatever the experience is, in the water, out of the water, just seeing the water's become normal.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be there's practice wears away the I that has a relationship with all of that.
Right, yeah, so there's none of it's better or worse than, you know, this experience isn't better or worse than this experience.
Or hold on to this one, or
mm-hmm.
push that one away, or this one mm-hmm. means that, or this one means that, or...
Yeah, it's all flowing, it really is freeing or spacious, like in what you're saying, I imagine,
mm-hmm.
because there's a freedom of movement through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not being an I, attempting, you know, making choices about what kind of experiences I want or whatever, or I'm making assumptions about what kind of what's correct practice or any of these kind of things, but really just letting experience move and paying attention and being informed by that without there being a somebody sort of collecting information and putting it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See,
Hannah. I've been looking at trusting the process and giving over to life and seeking guidance around an issue which ego is ferociously defending as its department,
okay.
which is monastic practice and contact with family and friends.
I'm in charge of this,
mm-hmm.
is what it's
mm-hmm.
saying.
And it's something that I've begun looking at in guidance and have been looking at a lot in the past week, and I'd just like to explore a little bit more now. So part of the experience of the retreat last week was really having this miraculous opportunity to receive the choice that this person has made to allow the heart to choose
mm-hmm.
and come
mm-hmm.
to the monastery to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that experience has been self-hate around how could you abandon all of these people. It's, you know, framing it in terms of
mm-hmm.
abandoning loved ones.
Yeah, which is fascinating.
And what I see about that is that ego screaming about abandonment is terrified of it being abandoned.
Which has happened. Right?
There's been a movement in
it's tagging along, probably. But you've made a radical choice
yes.
Against it.
Right, with the intention to
mm-hmm.
practice ending that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Something I heard on Open Air that last week, the week before, was really helpful, just very short and pithy, that egocentricity calls anything that is not it egocentric.
Mm.
And so, of course, it would be shouting, how could you be so egocentric?
So it's saying you're being egocentric because you've abandoned these people in your life to some poor sort of awful fate.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And there was a big workshop around that just in the week before the move, which is that the mother of a dear friend died, mm-hmm. and the you know, self-hate attached itself to that very theme of how could you...
That you should be doing something particular about that,
yeah.
and you're not because you've made this other choice.
Right.
That makes you really egocentric.
Yes.
And also a really bad person.
Yeah, so putting it all together as in those, like, causation steps that you mm-hmm. laid out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And part of what I was looking at last week was that there's a good person identity that's rooted in the duality of good person, bad person, which blocks the human from experiencing authenticity that's beyond good person, bad person.
Yeah, which is the point of it, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah. And just sort of really getting to experience that on a new level and excitement at the possibility for really bringing awareness to that and practicing dropping that. Mm-hmm. And so this issue feels very much, you know, kind of deeply embedded in that. So the identity of good daughter, good friend, in a dualistic sense, and the way that that's blocking authenticity in relationships, we could say.
Right. It's a perfect workshop right now, isn't
it? Yeah, truly.
It's exactly the right thing.
Yep.
For to assist you with getting past that yeah. that place you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm just looking now at the, I guess, looking at the how of that, which just brings me back to trusting the process, uh-huh, I think, and uh-huh. really truly using everything in our experience uh-huh. to see how we cause ourselves to suffer.
Yeah, so you've made a choice, and you're really appreciating you're appreciating the choice you make. You're feeling a lot of gratitude for that.
Mm-hmm.
Ego is reacting to that, mm-hmm. as we could expect.
Mm-hmm.
There's this particular content it's using around friends and family
mm-hmm.
To attempt to keep you in relationship with it, might we say?
Yes.
And you're using that in order to see kind of what that's all about and what your relationship is with ego.
Yeah.
And that's there's a trust in the process that goes along with it that kind of gives you the space to... Mm-hmm. to be looking at that and to be mm-hmm. Questioning it.
Right, right. And it feels, there's an awareness of the magnitude of the opportunity in all of that.
Uh-huh.
That it's a big area for this person.
Say more, what do you mean?
Well, that the ferocity that with which ego is defending this department gives me a sense of how much is locked up in this, mm-hmm. how much mm-hmm. energy, how much life force, mm-hmm. how much attention is taken away from alignment with life around the issue of, say, relationship with
yeah.
mother, relationship.
And so before this movement is happening, I'm guessing that's just me. Kind of like we were talking about a few minutes mm-hmm. ago. Mm-hmm. Am I right? That's just me. This is what you do. This is natural. This is being a good daughter or a good sister or whatever.
Yeah.
Good friend.
Yeah. Well, it's there's been awareness of it. It's never been so radically exposed as now, which is the awareness of the opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And just struck me too that there's already a self-hate around sort of doing it wrong, as self-hate would sort of say about anything. And it occurred to me very clearly during the precept ceremony that the an intention to bring focus to dropping self-hate, that the precept not to lead a harmful life was just ringing, mm-hmm. ringing clearly, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, self-hate is, you know, that very gross level of it is still loud and vicious and harmful, mm-hmm. and that that's, you know, that's got to end. taking not to lead a harmful life. Seriously.
Yeah. Well, see, no, but you've really gotten clear on what's what in this, haven't you?
Yeah.
That doesn't serve you, that it is self-hate.
Yeah.
That there's all these ways that conditioning has got you attached to it,
yeah.
really,
yep.
through various contexts, but particularly you're looking at the friends and family thing.
Right.
So it's not really about the friends and family, it's not about your relationship with them, it's about your relationship with it, and you've gotten
right.
really clear about that.
Right.
And so, it sounds like you've gotten to a place where, you know, this... You don't want that anymore.
Right.
You've seen it and you realize it's got to end. And so now you've engaged in the process of doing the work that's required to end that relationship.
Yeah. And just seeing the utter, like, revolting grotesqueness of how ego pretends to gets the human to believe that they're attending to a relationship with a loved one, when they're attending to the relationship with it. I mean it, but...
Yeah. What was that revolting...
Grotesque.
Grotesque
revolting.
Grotesque revolting, yeah. Well, it really describes it because, I mean, of course, I have no idea, but I bet you anything. I mean, it's using something authentic.
Yeah.
It's using an authentic care or love mm-hmm. that you had for these people
mm-hmm.
and turning it into the opposite, turning it into a way to feed it and produce self-hate and produce harm instead of what it naturally would do without that.
Yeah, so...
It really is grotesque.
Right, so like a concrete example would be, it would pretend that had I not moved to the monastery, I would be attending to the relationship with that friend who's grieving, you know, in a much more full, sort of round-the-clock way. Just getting the lie of that mm-hmm. I would be attending to the relationship with it mm-hmm. in
yeah.
a much more... round the clock way.
For sure.
And yeah, just,
you know, and I wonder if it's good for both relationships. It's clearly good for the relationship with self-hate to be not attending to it in that way. But I almost wonder about the other people also.
Oh,
you
sure.
know, because if there's a karmic sort of attachment and caretaking kind of thing going on,
yep.
at least it feels like it gives the opportunity, at least for you to recognize that everyone's adequate to their experience. And, you know, perhaps the other people also.
Yeah.
You know, because conditioning, no matter what it's doing and what form it's taking, it's always doing harm, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even if it looks like whatever we would call, you know, something good, you know, something acceptable, like caretaking,
yeah.
there's a harmfulness that's happening in there, too, because mm-hmm. it's taking away people's adequacy.
Yeah.
So really, it's nice to see how, you know, kind of that stepping back into practice and paying attention, instead of following conditioning into the content of things, it really does take care of everybody.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable necessarily for anybody, but it takes care of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, truly a happy, blessed opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Cameron.
Yeah, as we were talking about as earlier a little bit, when we practice, we keep seeing things over and over,
mm-hmm.
you know, our karma over and over, and mm-hmm. no, it's not that. It was reminding me of the Benjamin Franklin quote that I have not been unsuccessful 10,000 times. I have not failed 10,000 times. I have been successful at seeing 10,000 ways it does not work. And so it just seems like a really kind of a way to explain that sort of cycle around of karma that we keep uh-huh. seeing. We keep seeing it, but it's not a round circle, it's a spiral where
mm-hmm.
we keep seeing it at different levels when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally at some point, it's like we have that dropping into experiencing it on a different level.
And all the parts of that are necessary, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I got out of what was being said, and that's my experience too, because when it drops in, it's like all those times I've seen it are part of what allows it to drop into the experiential level.
Yeah, it really makes it kind of silly to like get beat up over being identified.
Yeah, I've seen this before. What's wrong with me?
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm doing it again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course I am. I'm doing this. I'm in this part over here.
Yeah.
We only do this every once in a while.
Right, and I had a very specific experience of that this morning. I got up this morning and I was just particularly tired and just felt I didn't want to get out of that nice warm cozy bed, flannel sheets on there and everything. So I got my recorder and brought it into the bed with a cup of tea, and I was just like, oh, I'm practicing. I don't need to go to the monastery today. I've been there for 2 days. Honestly, it said. And you know, you got your recorder, and you can sit, and it, you know, you don't have to drive over there.
It'll be so nice here with
me. It'll be so nice here with me, darling. Yeah, and I remembered, though, what came through was actually two things that I've just heard recently in the last little while of Sherry saying. That when you're alone, you're generally with it. And the other one was, it's slipping away right now. If you stay doing what you're used to doing, you don't encounter anything new. But if you jump and participate in life in ways that are new, you know, well, it's not new coming to the monastery, but it's always new.
It
sharing
is
every day. Yeah, it's always the.
This
you
is
know.
Brand new. You're having a brand new experience.
Every time, and every time I come to groups, there's always something that somebody says that clicks in some kind of way.
It's definitely not the same old relationship with conditioning.
Yeah,
that was trying to pull on you up there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and so those two things clicked in, and I just went, no way, buddy. I got up and jumped in the shower and got dressed, and here I am. So that's kind of an example of that, you know, because that could have been a really convincing argument this morning or whatever it was, you know, the seduction. Because those things felt really like they would be very nice to do, and I was already practicing.
Yeah, good practice for when it starts raining and it really.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that.
So.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you.
Let's see. I saw Sequoia next.
A couple of things. I really appreciated the conversation about relationship with friends and family, and I currently have a good friend whose husband is dying of a. I was going to say terminal illness. Well, that's kind of redundant. Anyway.
Dying of the kind of things people die of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And and they're just making it through with a lot of support from folks bringing them food and you know, being there. And of course, self-hate wants to take that, you know, and do what with it.
I'm not there.
Mm-hmm. And what just dropped in that conversation is just, you know, in the place of non-separation, there's hands doing, you know, bringing food. There's, you know, other folks practicing at monasteries. You know, it's just all one continuous flow, and it doesn't have to, you know, this form doesn't have to be serving in that particular way.
Yeah, you're doing your part, aren't you? You're not doing your part directly for him, because that's not available in your circumstances.
Yeah.
But you're doing your part for all, which includes him.
Exactly. And so it's just really nice to have that drop in. It's just like, oh, you know, just took a whole chunk away.
Whole chunk of self-hate.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that just came up this morning was, not came up, that arose, is I was looking at custody of the eyes, and as we've been talking about, just seeing how just getting at a deeper level, how self-hate, egocentric cognitive conditioning uses the eyes.
It really does.
Oh my gosh, I've never seen it that, you know, and I've had the experience lately of walking through the environment, much like, I don't know how to describe it, but kind of like a video camera, you know, and it's just like colors and form and, you know, just, it's just something, you know, just life coming in through these lenses.
Uh-huh.
But there's not like a conversation attached.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I feel like a camera on top of the stock, just kind of walking along through the environment, just, you know.
So let me see if I'm with you. Good. So it's not like a camera is not, it's not taking personally what it's
exactly.
seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just taking in light and
right.
whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like look up, look down, look around, look, go fast, whatever. This is just, you know, just taking it in uh-huh. in an impersonal way, like you said, like a camera or a would do.
Yeah. Yeah, and boy, that really highlights what's going on when that's not happening, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, gosh, every single moment of the day, it's taking it in with an interpretation
yes.
continually.
And just seeing how, you know, the other flip side of that is, you know, gosh, what's that person's response to what, you know, to my presence, you know, gosh, you're looking old, you know, it's just scanning all the time and using that information as a story, you know, that it just, yeah, it just contributes to its life.
Yeah. You know, what I just got when you said that is practicing with custody of the eyes is really helpful for practicing with the attention, isn't it? Like, yeah, because my experience is you really have to be there to make a choice about what you're looking at, especially if it has kind of a karmic draw, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, I don't know what it would be, but like right and wrong. Okay, I'm going to look around and see what everybody's doing what everybody's doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And if I just keep my attention to my eyes to myself, and then I keep my attention to myself, that whole process sort of, it just starts mm-hmm. spinning without being supported,
yeah.
and you really get to see it going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a big one for me. It's just like, yeah, doing it right. And how's everybody else doing it? To just kind of check in and see if it's going right.
Uh-huh.
You know?
And it completely supports the
exactly.
karmic perspective, the
exactly.
orientation.
And to take that away mm-hmm. and just listen to life mm-hmm. and be in, you know, a touch with life about how things are going. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and to practice in that way, I imagine, I mean, it really puts a person in a very powerful place, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because you're deciding
yes.
where the attention's going to go. And you're deciding, I'm not indulging the meaning-making machine.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be, just receiving the input.
Yeah.
Without, and just letting it pass, kind of like we've been talking about already. Mm-hmm. And just it's a lot coming in and moving through.
Yeah.
Without it getting held on to or stuck in all these different places.
Well, it just arose too, is it just what came up in during that recent retreat is that it really helps to circumvent that whole orientation to looking for an outside authority too. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, I supported that dropping that habit.
Yeah. Of like a constant check-in,
yeah,
look,
exactly.
identifying who the authority is,
yeah.
check-in there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're directing your attention here, then that eliminates, it breaks that cord, you might
yeah.
say.
And so then, I also wanted, as the conversation's going on, I realized, okay, so then it wanted to kick into, okay, so now we got a plan.
Uh-huh.
You know, what I have to do now.
I'm never going to look at anything.
Now we know how it's
going to,
you know.
It
just
never stops.
It just never stops. And to just realize, with the help of the conversation this morning, that it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, you know? And that's okay, isn't it?
It's okay.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, we could say it's better than okay. It's what is the content of our practice.
Yeah.
You know, we're never without something to practice with.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as we see something else comes in and we have something else to practice with. It always kind of keeps us on our toes. It always keeps us in that state we were just talking about a little while ago of change. You know, always doing new things, always jumping into new ways, mm-hmm. keeping from just kind of settling into this same old relationship with conditioning.
And it's such a, just as you're talking to that, it's like it's such an incredibly fresh way to live, mm-hmm. you know. not being that tired of the story. Yeah.
The other thing about it is, it's always out there being watched. I'm always here watching. Uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. Instead of, I'm in it. Uh-huh. Believe it. So what's it doing now? Where is it right now? Oh, there it is. There it is. Now it is. And it changes tactics. Oh, there it is. And so there's a way of kind of maintaining disidentification in that.
Yeah, and staying in the Aikido of being here. Uh-huh. Just keeping your eye on it.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's funny.
So there were a couple of conversations that put together the things I was looking at this morning. So the first thing that I was watching when I came to the meditation hall was just the gratitude for the structure, which I think someone mentioned mm-hmm. at the start of group. Mm-hmm. Because I just realized that this would be sort of the only occasions in which I meditate where I can actually just meditate. Mm-hmm. Because every time I meditate outside of the meditation hall, I have no control over, no matter what, I might turn off the phones, I don't look at the computer, but there's always a pull on my time and my attention. Mm-hmm. And so just to sink into the gratitude of the opportunity to have a time to sit, I never seen that before, but just the structure of having a sitting meditation period where I'm not required to be thinking about anything else or doing anything else, which is the case when I meditate, but I can't control the external inputs.
Yeah, well, down here it's actually the opposite. There's a guideline that says don't move, can't get up and get out of the hall.
That's right, the phone doesn't ring, the text doesn't come through, whatever happens, I was just grateful for the structure that gives us this tremendous opportunity to be focusing on the only thing that we're trying to do, which is learning to direct the attention. The second part of that when I was sitting is so, like the rest of the Sangha, I've been really, really practicing the counting and making sure that, or rather experimenting with the directing of the attention during sitting meditation. And at some point it dropped in that part of the challenge I was having with it is that I set the intention. So I'm trying to count.
Instead of the counting is happening.
Yes, and so it's never successful. No matter how hard I try, it's not successful. And so it flashed in a couple of weeks ago that maybe I should allow life to have my attention. And what would that experience be like? And I haven't had a chance to practice it, so it dropped in when I was sitting. It's like, okay, nothing is going to take my attention, so let life have it. And I had one of the most interesting meditations, because what I was looking at is that the breath would happen, the counting would happen, and the way life was maintaining my attention was to bring into awareness everything that was happening. So every time my attention would wander, the bird would trill, or the breeze would move those whatever it was, or the waterfall would come into awareness. And so it was really a very gentle guidance of attention on awareness. I would feel my breath in the body. And so it was one of those magical processes where life, as soon as I handed the intention over, I didn't lose count throughout the meditation.
Yeah, and you can see the support is constant being present. But
yes.
It's possible to see that if there's an I attempting to do it.
Yes.
But if you give it over, life has infinite ways of supporting that.
Well, and I had a really important insight drop in, because my experience was birds and breeze and breath and waterfall and, oh, what about the schedule for the next week at the monastery and whatever else. But the interesting part was what I realized in that process is that the I attempting to count the breath is reducing the lens of attention instead of attention being on awareness.
Yeah, it's more like, I'm sorry.
In that process, there cannot be someone. So I was approaching it in the sense of I am going to be directing my attention,
And the way that would feel is there would be no focus on anything other than the breath.
It's exclusive.
It's exclusive. Mm-hmm. And whereas in what life was teaching me in this process of my handing the attention over is really how to attend to awareness. Mm-hmm. And then in that awareness container, I could count that there would be attention, that the breath would be the constant, but there was just a much larger field of paying attention.
Yeah, it's inclusive.
It's inclusive. It's and it includes everything.
Everything. Everything that's here.
That's here. And again, while there might have been a wandering of the attention in some places, my experience of the thoughts that were dropping in were not it was not a conditioned experience as much as the availability of all those pieces of information that I was aware of that needed to happen. It was an information insight process of attention rather than a conditioned process of wander.
That's very interesting. Let me see if I'm following you on that. So you're sitting and there's the birds, there's the waterfall, there's those sort of things. There's the awareness of something that's not here.
Yes, right.
But so, but that has the same. It's the same as the birds.
Yes.
From that place, instead of something that's pulling you away. So you might say, I have an insight about something that needs to happen next week, but that is that drops in kind of in the same way as the other information does.
Right, and so it's not like so. My previous experience would be if I started to focus on that, I could be gone for a completely like
right.
30, 40 counts before mm-hmm. I realized that. I've actually gone off.
Right.
Whereas it was insight because it was discrete.
Mm-hmm.
It dropped in. I was aware of it.
And it's here.
I was, pardon?
I'm sorry. It's here also.
It's here also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had to receive that information because it's going to inform something that life wants to have happen mm-hmm. in maybe not in this moment. I don't have to get up and do a plan. Mm-hmm. But it's available now in my awareness.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever needs to happen.
And the difference is your relationship with it. So before probably, like, it's dropping in, but you're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, because there'll be a free association of thoughts that will follow that.
That's right.
If you're willing for that, that will take you somewhere really far away.
Uh-huh.
So instead, you're treating it just like everything else this year.
Right.
Like the sounds of the birds and the rustling of the leaves and everything. So it's dropping in, and there's a letting go that happens at the same time. And there's a trust because it's here now.
Yeah.
And so whenever you need it, it will be there for you.
Right. And so what I saw is when life teaches there has been an unexamined assumption that controlling the attention implies a certain exclusive focus and a permanent focus.
Mm-hmm.
So if my eyes are cast down and it happens to be a certain spot of brown on the windowsill, that has to be my focus mm-hmm. for the rest of the meditation period. And mm-hmm. if it wanders, then I actually wasn't paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was such a liberating experience to realize that the lens can be as broad as possible. And I can still be there for everything, and that's really the process of directing the attention.
Yeah, well, the awareness is holding all of that, isn't it? Because your attention, in the first place, it's more of a concentration.
Yes.
It's like you're concentrating down onto this one little thing, and the attention is trying to be riveted onto this one little thing. The other one is there's a field of awareness, and your attention is moving around in the field of awareness. But that doesn't mean that you're not present. It's just that the attention is attending to the different things in the field of awareness.
Right.
So you get to experience all that's here in that place instead of trying to push it all away in order to have an experience that I want.
Yes, mm-hmm. and control, right? Because then I have to keep my attention on that piece of 1 inch of brown resin. And if I don't, then I'm not paying attention.
And you can't let there can't be any insights in that place.
That's right.
Yeah, because it's all got to be excluded so that you can have the experience that I calls being present.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was just interesting because the other thing that dropped in around that is that when life teaches, it's such an interesting process because it was a particular piece of karma that I was letting go of, and there was an opportunity to let go of it. And I watched how I dropped the karma, into the flames, and the karma was being resist. It was resistance with a lot of ferocity that was being talked about. So clearly, a place where a lot of letting go needs to happen, mm-hmm. and it was about receiving assistance, mm-hmm. and the whole process was interesting. So I dropped it. I didn't look to see whether I had. Turned my back, assuming that I had. And I had to be assisted in realizing that it hadn't actually been dropped. Right? And then I had to go through the process of reaching into the flames in order to truly let it go. And there was such a profound teaching in that whole process,
yeah.
that the process that life has around letting go of karma is also available from a teaching perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's true, that to turn it over to life really, really allows us to learn in a way that this doesn't even have.
Yeah. That's what I was saying too. It's just like with the focusing the attention in meditation you're talking about. You're not in charge of that.
No.
The letting go of the karma. You know, I can't make that happen.
No.
Because it's going to decide what that looks like, and it's going to make all these rules, regulations about it and everything. But it really is up to life, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what I hear what you're saying is, so there's an intention to let it go, and a willingness to let it go, and then also a willingness to let life decide how that will happen. So immediately after, you know, you immediately got an opportunity to practice that, obviously,
yeah.
to receive the assistance.
Well, and to know that whole intention of letting it go to life, I wouldn't have been aware of the teaching if I wasn't paying attention.
Right.
And so it just comes down to learning to pay attention mm-hmm. is about the most important thing we can learn to do. Mm-hmm. Because once we do that, there's just availability in ways that there wouldn't be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And that giving over to life
yes.
is so important, isn't it?
Yes.
Because otherwise, even though we might think we're directing the attention, it's actually ego directing the attention.
That's right.
But if we give it over to life to direct the attention, the way you were talking about earlier, that's really where the teaching happens.
Yeah, and I think that's the conversation we started, that there's a process that we can trust mm-hmm. that shapes us if
yes.
we allow it.
Yeah, and that's really all we have to do, isn't
yes.
it? Just allow it to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. See, David.
Yeah, this is, again, it's been a great conversation. It's triggered a few things for me from this week. So I got to see a life strategy that attempts to get acted out, that is really unhelpful for myself and for all others. And the neat thing is that I don't know if it's unhelpful to others or not, but it kind of has that sense of being egotistic, so we can assume at the base of that it's probably not so cool for everybody. And the reason but I got to see it because of having a direct experience of the opposite mm-hmm. a couple different times. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I'll be able to articulate the direct experience because it was just one of those kind of sensory, mm-hmm. like whoa. Kind
Here
of
it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. oh gosh, that's mm-hmm. it. So one of them was, I think about 3 or 4 days ago, right when the full moon was beginning to get full. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's harvest moon, it's just killer right now, it's really. And so we were in there and doing the evening, the snack meal cleanup.
Okay.
And which is just a blast. I mean, that's probably my favorite thing out of everything at the monastery is meal cleanup.
Okay.
You know, it's just that synergy of everybody moving and, you know, just boom, boom, all this stuff's happening. And so I'm usually pretty jazzed in that anyway, unless conditioning's there, of course. But that's a real high energy place. And so I came out and I don't know exactly what I had been doing. I might have even been doing the grinder. What's the compost? And so I came back up and all of a sudden there was the moon. Mm-hmm. And it had just risen above the tree line.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stopped for a moment. And again, this is that direct sensory place. And the only words that were kind of available, because it was a rush of like, here. And the only words that were available were, I think I'll stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bigger than, I mean, there was the layer of the monastery. But then there was also this place of like, I think I'll stick around in life, which was really awesome. Really, really awesome.
Because and not I, your karma, I'm taking.
Not karma. And, you know, I've always had a story, or the I has always had a story of not wanting to have been born. Being born was a mistake. You know, ever since, I mean, I'm sure there was a point where I actually was pretty stoked to be in life, you know, maybe before the age of 5, almost guaranteed kind of thing. But I don't really have access to that. So my whole memory of life is, when can I get out of here? You know, when, you know, so it's all karma, it's all karmic, but to see that is not me is really tricky. And so to have that, you know, I could see the symbolism of it. Like there was the joy of like, again, it gets back to the conversation of trust, you know, trusting the structure of being here at the monastery. And then bigger than that, even seeing that structure, that trust is symbolic of trusting being in life, which is a big, I mean, that, you know, for the karma of this guy.
It's a big step.
That's a big step. I mean, that's a big corner to turn. So there was that. And then just yesterday after the retreat ended, I made the choice to stick around until after the bus left. So I had about 45 minutes of time before I was going to leave the property. And there's this huge open, there's a lot of energy from the retreat. And then there's this big expansive big energy wanting to just participate still. You know, it's like everything had stopped, but the energy wanted to carry on. Yeah, exactly. So I did some things that I had, you know, kind of thought I was going to do or whatever. And then there was still a little bit of time. And so I went over to check on the tomatoes, to harvest a few tomatoes. And again, the same thing. It was that place of like, everything was quiet. There was this stillness, and all of a sudden, whoosh, there it was. That place of like, I think I'll stick around.
This is a good place to be.
This is a good place to be. And again, it was multi-layered. It was that place of, yes, I'm in the garden. This is a good place to be. The monastery is a good place to be. Life is a good place to be. And that, again, that was really big. So with that, what's been kind of arising and dropping in is this like opposite life strategy of that, which I get to see probably the easiest for me is in like male-female relationship, like when I'm in relationship, which is basically an orientation or a strategy of I want to get in, get all the karmic needs met, what's in it for me, and then I'm out of here. And I can see it in a relationship. I can see it in the orientation or strategy that I brought to the monastery when I arrived. You know, so I'm going to get here, get everything I need.
And split.
And split. Because it's all about me. And these people, they're pretty cool, but whatever. You know, it's all about me. Me, me, me. It's very, very egocentric. And it's like, it's my entire, it's the I or me. It's that. That's a life strategy.
Yeah. And that I is not in that other experience, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. And there's so much freedom in that other experience. Because there isn't that kind of incessant push for, well, let me get out of here now. Can I leave now? And that place, again, it's that bigger place too of, can I get out of life now? When is this going to be over? I've seen enough already. You know, what else do you want from me? You know, so there's a kind of victim in it. There's just, so I got to see just all this kind of like karmic life strategy that has really been driving the system forever.
And the alternative.
And the alternative.
Where your needs are met.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved that both of those times when all the needs were met, there was really nothing going on. You know? I mean, I just walked up the hill and there was the moon and all of my needs were met in that moment. Yeah. I mean, that's just so brilliant. Yeah. That's so it. Mm-hmm. And you know, even getting to the idea of like, you know, the I controlling it or, you know, these kind of things, there's just, it just can't happen. You know, you know, Sherry's guidance this week about, you know, that if there's agency, you know, there can't be choice. You know, that we don't ever really have choice or whatever. And yet there's, so there it was in that moment. It was just such a, it was really, really great. Mm. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all.